Hello and welcome to the Heads and Volleys podcast with me, Lee Dunn. Recently, I shared with you that I've become an educator for US soccer, which is a really cool position. Doesn't pay very much, if anything at all, actually. I've done several courses now, I haven't been paid yet, which is pretty funny. But that's okay. I don't do it for that reason. I do it for my love of the game. I do it for my sole purpose, which is to develop the game, to provide the game to as many players as I can, to give as much experience as I can. So then, when the methodology was introduced to me as play, practice, play, and I know there are critics of the methodology and the way it's delivered, but having now taught it several times and have gone through the curriculum and challenged coaches on why they do what they do, and even talking here and through social media platforms, talking about the arrival games of play so that players are arriving and instantly running onto the field and jumping into a game. Of course, with older players, we worry about stretching and them being ready to do something like that. But with younger players, they should be arriving and playing. One of my favorite questions for leading the courses is always around, what do the players do when you're not there? Because you can guarantee that they are usually not doing what you want them to do or what you think they should be doing, which is often maybe foot skills or laps or whatever stuff that they do. But if you actually were late on purpose, you'd see them probably all shooting balls at the goal. You'd see them all doing all sorts of funny stuff. And I think if we can incorporate some of that into our training, then we may be providing a more positive experience than we are currently. And sometimes we just need to reflect on that. And that's where play is really valuable for the start of the PPP methodology. But then talking about the core, and everybody talks about planning their training sessions and what they can do. But the purpose of this episode is to talk about the final play portion of our training session. So when you run the final training session or final at the end of your training session with your players, often a scrimmage is throw the players out there, set the goals up, and away they go. Generally, it's a time when a coach will disengage. Now, if you're listening to this and saying, I don't do that, then I'm not saying it to you. But if you look around on a field on an average night, towards the end of training, everybody's now scrimmaging. Coaches may be talking. They may just be sat down. They may just be watching. But they're very, very rarely still involved in the way that they were in the core portion of the training session. And often a scrimmage is a reward, or it's some sort of subjective length of time based on how the coaches perceive the player's attitude and engagement in the training session. Even if it's the worst passing pattern training session in the world, the coach is then still saying, you guys did really well tonight because you stuck through it, or you didn't do very well because you made loads of mistakes, so you get less time for scrimmaging because you guys weren't good enough. You didn't match my expectations. And unfortunately, that's often the experience of players when it comes to scrimmaging at the end of the game, at the end of training sessions. But if we are realistic, our players need as much experience as possible playing the game. They play one or two games at the weekend, they play for 12 weeks, and then they may go to some tournaments and cramming 100 games in 5 hours. But aside from that, they don't have much other experience of playing. And recently I posted about school soccer in San Francisco, where we take pickup soccer to schools, and it seems so silly to do it, but that's where the players are. That's where they're unaffected by their coaches and by their teams and by their clubs and by the stigma around what a training session should be. So we take pickup soccer to schools and get the kids playing the game because they don't spend enough time playing and experiencing the game. And that's really what this episode is going to talk about, and how we can use it in multiple ways that are going to benefit our teams. So let's start with my favorite comment, which is the players find it boring. Just think about that. The players find it boring. And then think about it in a bigger picture, where running tryouts for a club and the coaches say the players are bored, they're not really interested, but all we're doing is playing 7v7, 9v9, 11v11, depending on the age of the team and their tryout. I run ODP tryouts for 3 weekends in a row, and the same question comes up. Well, should we do something different for the players because they look kind of bored playing the game? And then my question is, well, what are they here for? Now, my fear is that we're creating players who can train but can't play the game. And this was proven last night as I ran a 7v7 field portion for the grassroots. And it, the core portion of the training session was a 1v1 that could adapt into a 2v1, into a 2v2. And as I watch this, it's crazy to me that as soon as the player took a shot in the 1v1, the defender instantly stopped. The attacker took their shot and instantly stopped. And that, to me, is indicative of the drill nature that we have, and maybe just in the US, maybe across the world, but the drill nature that everything is led by the coach, everything is led by a whistle, everything is led by the cones, balls out, next player, and its rotations and its repetitions. So then that player who took the shot then became the defender. So they're already thinking about becoming the defender. So they just give up and walk behind the goal to become the defender. And the defender who was defending hopefully did their job. They don't really know, because as soon as the player took the shot, they just walked away. And so they are now walking to take their turn as the attacker. So not only are we, and I wrote a book about this, not only are we putting players in the same 1v1 over and over and over and over again, but we're not teaching them anything around transition, around playing the game. And this is where this drill mentality comes into our players playing the game for an extended period of time, especially in either pickup or in the scrimmage stage of a training session. And that's where I think coaches say the players look bored because they don't really know what to do. They don't really understand the open concept and nature of the game in a training environment. They're so used to being told what to do. So then how do they go from that environment to then going and playing the game at the weekend? I don't understand how our players can magically switch it on, especially with younger players, when they don't really understand much of the game, because they're not taught it during the game, during the practice phase of their week of soccer. So when we get on the field and we've finished our training sessions and then we're saying, okay, let's go scrimmage. What does it look like? Do you set your team up in a formation? Are you able to scrimmage against another team, hopefully of the same age? The club I was at here in Sacramento for a hot minute, I had to fight so hard to get the teams of the same age on the same field at the same time. Just think, if you coach 2012 boys and your 2012 B team or A team is on another field on another day at another time, what benefit do your players have for not being exposed to those other players, whether you are the B or the A team or the C team or the XYZ team? Why wouldn't you want to be around players of the same age? Why wouldn't you want your B team players to see the A team players? Why wouldn't you want your A team players to be scared by the B team players, challenging them for their place in that A team? Now, of course, the politics around it. Yes, I know parents lose their mind if we drop their players because we've sold them a dream of being on the A team. I understand that. But for scrimmage purposes, we're now able to play a bigger, more meaningful game. Of course, you have 8 players at practice, you're going to play a 4v4 at the end of practice. That's how it's going to work. But what does that look like if you're adjusting to a 4v4 training session or final scrimmage? Are you playing a diamond? Are you playing a 2 and a 2? Are you playing a 3 and a 1? How are you setting it up relative to the formation that you play on the weekend, and then also relative to the practice that you just worked on? So we just worked on, for example, last night in the 7v7, we did 1v1s. 1v1s, defending the goal. So I may set that up as a 2 and a 2. So 2 center backs, or I may have it as my 2 and my 3, however it works out based on the formation that I play. And then I'm going to have 2 attackers from the other team that will line up. They'll play in a very similar formation, 2-2s, so almost like a square. And then it will be able to go both ways, maybe to pug goals, maybe to wide goals. But we're going to, well, we've worked on attacking the goal, so it's going to be a central goal. It could be a flag, could be cones, could be a big goal with my assistant coach in goal or a parent in goal, you know, the noisy parent, put them in goal and put them to work. But that's what my final scrimmage is going to look like, because that's what we did in the practice. The players are playing in the same positions. They're understanding the same demands, but now it's in a game situation. Now, if you coach a 7v7 team and you've got 8 players at practice and you play against another 7v7 team, you're able to play a 7v7 game. You're able to work on what your players are going to experience in the game at the weekend. So maybe you play a 2-3-1, which would work out perfect. You have your back two, then your middle three, and then your attacker. They're playing as they would in the game. They're doing their thing. They're trying to figure it out. But you've worked on defending the goal, and that's where your primary focus is. Again, often we go from the core training, the quote-unquote drill situations, into a game where we throw them out and say, go have fun. And then as a coach, I just sit back and watch. But actually, I'm saying to them, we play a 2-3-1. Here's our formation. Whether you believe in rotating positions or however you manage your position rotation and your players, you will do that also in practice. Why is that important? That's important not only for your players to become familiar with the profiles of the positions that you're asking them to and become familiar with the coaching that you would also give them in a game. But it's also practice for you as the coach to identify how they play, to identify how they work as a line and with the line ahead of them. It's important for you to identify the team shape and the style of play of how you play out through pressure or how you're breaking lines with the ball. And then importantly, of course, what you did in the training session of how to defend the goal with those two or with the midfield three supporting. Your game is happening in practice every single time. Now, my previous club, I simply said every Thursday is a game day. All you'll do at practice is play games because your players need the experience and so do you as a coach. You only get to practice coaching in a game once a week, sometimes twice a week. Tournaments don't count because tournaments are all about winning. They're not about fun. They're not about development. They're all about winning. So we use the State Cup or the league play during the weekend. Those are our moments to practice. Now, if you're practicing something once a week, it's really difficult to get good at it. But if you're practicing coaching in the game, coaching your team through the game, and your players are getting that same experience every night of practice, and you practice three times a week, two games at the weekend, now you've got five times the exposure of coaching in the game. You learn the nuances, you learn the rules, you learn to challenge your players, and it's fun. You do that game in quarters, in halves, you train for 90 minutes, that should be a 40-minute scrimmage, in my opinion. You could play 220s, you could play 410s, you could play 13-minute thirds. There are lots of things that you can do to use that time efficiently whilst your players are playing the game. Now, that seems kind of counterintuitive, right? That you're actually focusing on yourself developing as a coach in that environment when the things I talk about of how you can begin to practice coaching in the game. Now, of course, your players benefit because they are playing the game. And that's the next point that I want to touch on here. And that is the nuances of the game, especially to jump from 4v4 to 7v7, and any other stage, 7v7 to 9v9, 9v9 to 11v11, there is significant change for the players. There is the build-out line or the removal of the build-out line. There are now more space on the field. There's more players on the field. At each stage, now we're adding from 7v7 to 9v9, we're adding four more players, two for us and two for them, and then the same when we jump to 11v11. There's a lot of change for these players to begin to experience and to learn how to handle. That's what we can use our practice for. Then also consider the rules of the game. Corner kicks, throw-ins. So last night we finished with play two, where they played 6v6 games. We actually had one big goal for each mini field because we had 26 players. So we were able to have a 7v6 on each field. And so we had one team had seven with the goalkeeper, six on the field playing against six. And they used a central pug goal to defend two. Does it look like the game? Yes. Is it realistic to the game? It's a little bit different given that we don't have a goalie for the other team, but we deal with it. We adjust and we adapt and we make sure that the rest of the game looks like the game. Was the field regulation size? No. If you think about your performance environment, your training environment with your players, how often do you get to practice on a regular field? How often do you get to use a full-size goal? How often do you get all of your players there? So the situation is always changing. But we played it, and the coaches would say, that they said in the first half, no corners, don't worry about corners, we just move on. We just throw in, yeah, just get it back in the play. It doesn't matter how you do it. It doesn't matter, just get it. Then one team scores, and then the coaches say, we'll just build out. We'll just work on building out. Let's just build out. So our game scenario has just become another training activity. We've lost a lot of realism by removing the parts of the game that make it the game. The field was narrower than it should be, but we could still work on corners. And so then my challenge to the coaches is, if your players are not allowed to head the ball at 7v7, how are you taking corners? Are you still trying to swing the ball into the box? And we watch them do it, and then the players still kick the ball behind the goal, but we don't do anything about it. That's another one of those nuanced things that happens a lot. So why aren't we taking corners short? Could you take a short corner on a short field? Absolutely. Probably more reason to do it. So is that practice? Yes. Is it realistic practice? To an extent, yes. Do we have the regular size field? No, again, we don't. But if we don't and we wait for the regular size field, then we will ultimately never get to practice corners. So why not use what we have? And then we don't get to the game and lose our minds, hopefully. The same with throw-ins. The throw-in is, depending on who you talk to, is an opportunity for your team to do something with the ball. Not just get the ball in the field, not just throw the ball down the line. You can work on where throw-ins can be effective for your team, all within this final scrimmage that's going on. You're playing it like the game, all whilst also coaching the defending of the goal, because that's what we just worked on in our training session. But now the players are playing. The goalkeeper is saving the ball. The goalkeeper is using the build-out line, which I made the coaches cone out because it needs to look like the game as much as possible. Again, we're preparing them for the weekend, because at the weekend, the referee doesn't say, goal, just practice from the back, just build out. Doesn't matter about kickoff. We go to the kickoff and we play from the middle every time. So we play the game and it seems silly. It seems like an inefficient use of time, perhaps. It seems like it doesn't matter, just get on with it. But our players don't have the experience required to just simply skip these things. And what we do instead is we use portions of our training time to work on corners, which is the most boring thing ever, by the way, because your players are standing around while you're telling them what to do. I bet if you work on corners, you probably don't give them time to be creative in how to succeed taking corners. But then again, I also bet that you haven't given them structure to take corners. So then we just practice whatever we think is going to be most efficient for the game. Give them a structure or allow them the freedom to try it out. And then maybe that's a better use of our practice time. But again, it's still done in the scrimmage. The same with throw-ins. There are things that we can do to practice throw-ins. Like we say, you have to take the throw-in in 3 seconds so we can get them used to playing with speed. But then that also pressures them into doing it correctly, because if they don't take the throw-in correctly and they lift their feet or they're on the field, then we give a foul throw the other way. We call fouls. Maybe sometimes we call the play much stricter than a regular referee would to challenge them, to see how they react, to help them play the game much quicker. And these are all of the nuances that are missed when we just use a scrimmage at the end of practice as a reward for the players doing a perceived good job. Or we don't let them scrimmage at all because of a perceived bad job. And therefore, now they've lost X amount of time of game experience. And instead, what were they doing when you didn't let them scrimmage? Probably standing around cones trying to get a pattern right that probably is completely irrelevant to the game. Because if you put them in a game, that pattern does not exist. Maybe at a higher level, maybe you're coaching superstar, elite, premier 7v7, and they need that and it's beneficial, then I'm not going to argue with you on that one. But for the core of our grassroots players, which is what every 7v7 player is, I might argue with you about, every youth soccer player is a grassroots player for the most part. They are needing to learn the game. They are needing the experience. We have to do a better job for our players. And to wrap this up, you may be thinking, back to my original point, players think it's boring. If we're using time limits, if we're using real competition against another team or against ourselves, and we're counting goals and we're using the goals as a tally and we're saying that this is X, Y, and Z, this is the benefit. Maybe the winning team chooses the captain for the weekend if you have captains, if you do things like that, if you decide what color socks your team's going to wear because you have multiple different orders of socks for your team. There are lots of little things that you can add in. And again, I'm talking grassroots. I'm talking younger players here. But the same applies to the older players too. The competition that you can bring into the game can be relative to your players. And there are thousands and thousands of ideas that you can use without saying the losers do push-ups or the losers do laps. Losers collect all the balls. Guess what? I don't want to collect the balls, even if the ball is right there behind the goal. I still don't want to go and collect it. I would rather fight for an hour of a game to not have to go and get that ball. And I guarantee that almost every single player in your team would also feel the same way. So there are simple parts of competition that we can add in there. But what if your players really don't? What if you truly are a low-level grassroots, recreational, competitive team, and you just have players that are out there for a great time, and they don't really care? You know, the players, they'll be talking, maybe they'll do a cartwheel when the ball goes out of play. Those are the types of players. How do you engage them in the greater picture? Because what I don't want you to do is to avoid scrimmaging or have less scrimmage time because of 2, 3, 4 players that don't really care to play. Think about your grassroots makeup. You have players that want to play, players that don't want to play. Just like if you start practice 20 minutes late because there's 3 kids that are going to be late, you're now punishing those kids that are there for 20 minutes waiting for those other players to arrive. So how do you challenge those individual players? You might put them in goal. If you've been working on defending the goal, this is probably a really good time to do it because they may just be sat leaning against the post or playing with something or just not really wanting to be in goal, but they'll go and stand there. Now the pressure is really on the defender to defend the goal in a 1v1 or a 2v2 in that situation because they don't want a shot to go on goal because they know it's probably going to go in. Then you might also look at challenging the individual players with their own task. Can you touch the ball 4 times in this quarter? This quarter is going to last for 6 minutes. All you got to do is get on the ball 4 times. Can you pass the ball to our teammates? Can you take X amount of shots? Can you use a skill when you get the ball? Even if they do it in open field. The concept is I'm challenging them, and I've talked about this before, that happened with Ollie Watkins, the now Premier League player, when he was playing in the lower leagues of English football, where he was challenged to get involved in the game in some different ways. And all of it was just a purpose for him to get involved and not be a stuck winger who's just waiting for something to happen. And so that was my ideas here for your younger players or for any player that is just struggling to get involved and stay motivated through a scrimmage situation, that they can touch the ball, that they can do certain things. They can make X amount of tackles. They can intercept the ball 2 or 3 times. They could take 3 throw-ins, for example. But now you have to manage the expectations with the parents. As I watched our PPP training session last night, there's lots of noise, there's lots of fun, there's lots of talking, there's excited chatter amongst the players. There's a little bit of messing around. But if I'm really looking at what I want for that experience for those players, we hit on the key points with questions and keywords and some guided discovery through the play phases. But now we're also hearing, and the hearing test is a good one, they're having a good time. Coaches are working more with individual players and they're preventing or they're stopping the play, if that makes sense. They're not stopping the play as much as they would in a traditional kind of stop and freeze moment and then talking at the players. But they're pulling players to the side and challenging them in their own way. They're asking them what they could have done differently. They're asking them what they saw. They're asking them how they could do things a little bit differently or how they could challenge other players in other ways. They are connecting with the players whilst the greater game is happening. So we have to manage that expectation with the parents because sometimes they go with an expectation that their kid is going to work hard and their kid's not really going to have fun because fun can be perceived as a kid's messing around and not learning. If you have a supportive club, a supportive director, or if you just take it on yourself and you say, this is what I expect you guys to hear and to see at training. You may see players falling over and laughing. Imagine that. Imagine them having fun doing that at the grassroots level. Imagine them being able to just take a moment in a practice, whether it's the 1v1 portion we were talking about or the play phase when we call time, and they just fall over laughing because they're just loving having a great time. Or that player who you've challenged to take 3 throw-ins is running across the field to take a 4th and begging for the time to continue just so they can get 1 more in than what coach said. The environment can be crazy. The environment can look differently for one player than it does for another. Remember that parents are watching their player. They see their player standing in goal, picking flowers, leaning against the post, not really making any saves, and they think that their player is probably the worst player, is doing the worst job compared to everybody else. You have to manage that expectation. Hey, your player sometimes struggles to focus. Your player XYZ, here's the issue, and here's why I put the player in goal. Here's why the player was challenged to take four throw-ins. This is why we're now challenging the player. And probably, unfortunately, that player doesn't really want to be there. It's probably dropped off anyway by a nanny or by a parent that then takes off. And that's another whole situation for you to work out. But the more play for your players, the more experience that you get, the better you get at it. Again, you train 3 times a week, you have 2 games on the weekend. Now you've got 5 episodes during the week to practice coaching in the game. Then you go to the game at the weekend. You've had 3 or 2 practices during the week where you've worked on your formation, where you've worked on corners, where you've worked on free kicks, you've worked on throw-ins, you've worked on all of these aspects of the game that are lacking. And of course, sometimes if we don't work on those things, we get to the game and we make a mistake with a throw-in and they get the throw-in because it was a foul throw. We work on throw-ins for 20 minutes the next week and hopefully we eradicate that issue. But we can't just do it once. Keep doing it through your training sessions, through the gameplay. So you train for 90 minutes, at least half, in my humble opinion, should be spent scrimmaging. Not just scrimmaging in the traditional sense of throw the cones out, throw the goals out, away you go, kids, go and have a great time. Should be done in the sense that it's structured with a formation. It's structured around the topic of our practice, of the cycle, of the week, of the day, however you plan out your season. It should all be done around that. If you can play against somebody else, play against somebody else for a realistic environment. Younger boys, older girls, younger boys, whatever it looks like, you go and play against somebody else. You practice your skill of coaching in the game and your players practice playing the game. So an element of a ramble today, but the value of playing the game for your players is so high. They learn so much and they will develop within the game that you are trying to get them ready to play. You can pull out technical training. You can pull out team tactical stuff and of course focus on the topic of the week. Please share this. Please tell everyone. Scrimmages are important.